You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks, joined as always by my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. Glad to have you listening into our Wednesday episode. Whether this is your first time checking out Locked On Seahawks or you are a regular listener, glad to have you tuning in. Jam-packed episode coming your way. We're going to continue our training camp preview, offensive side of the football, looking at the tight end group. And we're going to discuss a few veteran defensive tackles who remain unsigned that might be worth kicking the tires on if you're the Seahawks. Winning your league starts with the right data. Vinny Iyer of the Sporting News provides you the edge you need in your fantasy football leagues. Locked On Fantasy Football is a daily podcast all year round, so your fantasy team never fails. Subscribe to the Locked On Fantasy Football podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. This has been a lingering story for the last several months. It's still incredible to me that KJ Wright, coming off the fantastic 2020 season that he put together, still remains unsigned. A lot of people have reached the verdict at this point. The Seahawks are going to move on. They're not going to be bringing him back. But one player in particular doesn't necessarily agree with that verdict, and that would be KJ Wright himself. Coming on Sirius XM radio yesterday, indicated that there is still a chance that the Seahawks could bring him back. He still believes that is a possibility. And I guess when you look at the situation, since nobody else has signed him, Rob, the door is going to remain open until he finds his next team. And the Seahawks have an opportunity to look at their team in training camp next week. Maybe a few practices in, Pete Carroll and John Schneider might be like, you know what? It's time. Let's go bring back the ever so reliable KJ Wright. There's a lot of moving parts here, though, and the fact they haven't signed him 3 months after the start of free agency still leaves me a bit skeptical that there's going to be a reunion.
Yeah, Corbin, I agree with you. I am a little bit skeptical at this point. It just feels like now for a long time, if the Seahawks had made re-signing KJ Wright a priority, it would have been done by now, and I don't have any extra insight into what KJ Wright's contractual demands might be, but I think that that as we get closer to training camp, then KJ Wright's stock in some ways is going to go up, because inevitably we're going to see injuries throughout the NFL. And as you mentioned, KJ Wright is just, you know, basically the epitome of reliability and consistency. Versatility, has played all three traditional weak side, strong side, middle linebacker positions in the 4-3, alignment. And you just think about all of those former defensive coaches who are now throughout the NFL, the Chris Richards of the world, you know, all of the different coaches that are out there. Dan Quinn's and Robert Sellas and folks like that. I just think that there is a possibility that is going to open up an opportunity for KJ Wright. And then specifically in Seattle, yeah, I think it makes all the sense in the world why KJ Wright would be open to that possibility. However, I do think it most likely is going to require injury for it to happen with the Seahawks. The club just seems like they are so committed with the idea of almost a two linebacker setup with Bobby Wagner and Jordan Brooks. Obviously, with the development of Daryl Taylor, and different things that they might be doing with him, as well as Ben Burkervin and Cody Barton, of course. But at the same time, I also think that we might see Seattle try to transition their defense a little bit more. Greg Bell at Tacoma News Tribune kind of mentioned the idea of really moving around Marquise Blair in that big nickel type of situation. We've seen Seattle do that last year with Ryan Neal as well. So I think all of those bodies, it's not just the linebackers. I think that if there's any type of injury to a Ryan Neal, to a Marquise Blair, to a, again, any of those linebackers, that's the scenario I anticipate that where Seattle would be calling KJ Wright and asking him back. I would love to see KJ Wright back in the Seahawks uniform just because of the way that he's played and how he's handled himself both on and off the field. But at the same time, I do wonder if maybe that ship has sailed barring injury.
I think it has sailed, and maybe they will bring him back early in camp. Again, the door is not going to be closed until he signs with another team, but this almost feels like a case where the player wants this way more than what the team does, and that's not insulting KJ Wright. I know Pete Carroll and John Schneider have the utmost respect for him for what he's done in 10 seasons in the NFL, the contributions that he's made for this franchise, but you mentioned the reliance on nickel and dime packages. Last year, they used their base defense a lot less than they did in 2019, even after Marquise Blair got hurt early in the year. They had Ugo Amadi playing a lot of those snaps. Ryan Neal played a lot of those snaps in the dime packages. And honestly, with Jamal Adams, to me, it is a better systematic, it's a better schematic fit for Jamal Adams and the ability to use him as you see fit, blitzing him off the edge, different things of that nature. When you are running two linebacker sets with an extra defensive back on the field, Jamal Adams functions like that third linebacker in that case. So I just don't know that there's going to be the snaps there for KJ Wright. And you add in the fact, you mentioned Daryl Taylor, he's got a lot more pass rushing chops. That's something they want at that Sam linebacker spot, what Bruce Irvin was able to give them for a number of years. They believe Daryl Taylor can do that, maybe even be better in that capacity, rushing off the edge. And Jordan Brooks is the guy at weak side linebacker. As great as KJ Wright's been, he excelled last year moving to the Sam spot because that ended up, you know, masking some of those athletic deficiencies that have cropped up here over the past few years. KJ Wright has lost a step or two as an off-ball linebacker. That wasn't necessarily a great fit anymore. Jordan Brooks is going to bring speed to the middle of this defense. So that is his job. He's going to be playing every down at that position next to Bobby Wagner. Who knows how much they're going to have a Sam on the field. And a lot of times it might be a Leo and Daryl Taylor, and they'll just be doing two linebacker sets, and Jamal Adams will be their extra linebacker. So I just don't know that the reps are going to be there. It just seems like, based on what KJ Wright said in this interview, obviously he's played his entire career in Seattle. He would love to finish his career in Seattle. He has teammates that want him back, like Bobby Wagner, that probably are begging the Seahawks organization, hey, we need to bring him back. I just feel like this is one of those cases, though, where the player wants this really badly, and I'm sure the team would love to have him, but Pete Carroll and John Schneider understand this is a business, and the way things are set up depth-wise and how they're going to be playing defensively from a scheme standpoint, I just don't think it aligns with bringing him back unless there's injuries.
Well, injuries, and then I love the fact that you mentioned Jamal Adams, because as we've talked about so much, Corbin, you know, Adams, of course, is going to be looking for a contract renegotiation. Yep. So if Adams were to have a prolonged holdout, then that might force Seattle to kind of rethink their ideas here on how they might be using the extra defensive back. I mentioned Ryan Neal, Marquise Blair. I'm happy that you mentioned Adams because, you know, as we all know, Jamal Adams is a very unique player in his specific strengths. And so if you are going to be putting him in the box where he just developed into an absolute superstar for the Seahawks a year ago, then, then again, if he were to hold out, then perhaps Seattle would feel like a little bit more compelled to make that phone call to KJ Wright. I agree with you, though. I think feel like this feels to me like a player wants to return more than the team, sees a fit for him. I think that they want him to return as well. I think that if KJ Wright were to, if his playing career were ever to be, or whenever it is over, I think that he is the type of guy that that Pete Carroll, that Ken Norton Jr., and all of those litany of defensive coaches that we talked about before, including Gus Bradley. I didn't mention Gus Bradley before, but you think about all those guys who are serving as defensive coordinators elsewhere. Again, if there's any type of injury, any type of holdout situation, like we just unfortunately saw with the Rams running back Cam Akers just a couple of days ago, then that's the inevitability of this business. And that's why I do think that KJ Wright has a very good chance of playing somewhere, just not necessarily Seattle in 2021.
Yep, I expect he's going to have a job sooner rather than later. We're seeing some of these veterans get plucked up. Melvin Ingram signed with the Steelers earlier this week, for example. You're going to start seeing some of those players come off the free agent scrap heap as training camps open next week across the league. Speaking of some of those veterans that are still unsigned, perfect segue going into our second quarter. The Seahawks lost Jaren Reed this offseason. They have some question marks at the defensive tackle position, and there's some decent defensive tackles with all-pro pedigree that are still available on the market. Rob and I are going to be debating whether the Seahawks should kick the tires on any of those three players when we return. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all the action at BetOnline. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including Major League Baseball, the NBA, NHL, and all of your UFC MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Wednesday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined as always by Rob Rang. We broke this down last quarter. KJ Wright, one of many decorated veteran free agents that still remains unsigned. It's been an odd offseason, two straight offseasons that were different in a lot of ways, but they were both not your typical NFL offseasons. This year, with the salary cap plunging because of last year's COVID-19 impacted season, no fans for a lot of teams, or minimal fans for the ones that did actually have fans in the stands. And so for that reason, a lot of your expensive veterans have remained unsigned late into the offseason with training camp approaching, KJ Wright being one of those. One position group that the Seahawks could still address before camp kicks off a little over a week from now is the defensive tackle position. And there are some pretty good veterans that are available on the market, at least if you're looking from a resume standpoint. You've got Geno Atkins, former All-Pro from the Cincinnati Bengals, Quan Short, former All-Pro from the Panthers, and of course, Jarrell Casey, former All-Pro from the Tennessee Titans. All three of those players now well into their 30s. They're getting to be older players. They've all had some injury issues recently, but again, all three of these guys have Pro Bowl and All-Pro pedigree, big-time talents that have put together good seasons as pass rushers, solid run defenders as well. The Seahawks don't have Jaron Reed. And Rob, this is a position where they've had success signing older players late in the offseason in the past. Just a few years ago, Al Woods being the latest example.
Yeah, Al Woods in previous years, Kevin Williams going back some time, Earl Mitchell, so this is a franchise that seems like that, you know, right before training camp, they have looked to that to add a veteran defensive tackle in the past. And as you just mentioned, there are some big names and some big stat books from some of these defensive tackles who are still available there. I'm really intrigued by this position. Group. The fact that Seattle does have, you know, one open spot on the roster, they've had that now for a couple of weeks, led to all kinds of speculation of what the club might be looking to do. Again, I think this is a little bit bloated at that defensive tackle position. I think that if these three players, these veterans, are in fact healthy, and that is the report as of just yesterday, there was a report from ESPN's Adam Schefter that Quan Short is back and healthy. He's missed several games over the last couple of years, as has Atkins, as has Casey, and that's the biggest concern is, are they, of course, in shape? Are they healthy? Of the bunch, Casey is the one that intrigues me the most, and I'll tell you a couple of reasons why. For one, of course, he is a former USC guy. I think that Pete Carroll is going to be intrigued by that. He's going to have the history with him that might allow him to re-recruit Casey if necessary. Two, just his body style and playing style, to me, I think would make for a pretty intriguing tandem with Puna Ford. They're kind of built similarly, and they both have good quickness and power. I think that they could be really intriguing in that regard. And another thing I would mention is that the injury that Casey is coming off was a torn bicep, and these type of injuries happen, unfortunately, but it's not the kind of injury that, in my opinion, at least, the medical professional that I am, you know, jokingly, but it's not the type that seems like it recurs and it's, you know, a knee or a spinal or anything like that. And so that's encouraging to me as well. And then finally, Casey was a Pro Bowler, all pro, as you mentioned, a defensive tackle in a traditional 4-3 alignment back in Tennessee. And he got traded to Denver this past season, Corbin. And he just wasn't a great fit, in that 3-4 defense that they run there. And so they now run there, I should say. And so I think that was part of the reason why he didn't have the big numbers. I think you put Jarrell Casey in the middle of a traditional 4-3. I still think that he's got a year or two in him. And I think that he's hungry. And so to me, if that he would be the one of that three, that if I was John Schneider, I'd be making my top phone call of the remaining free agents that are available, including KJ Wright.
I'm intrigued by Casey, too, just because he's only a year removed from a really solid season with the Titans. Not the best year of his career by any means, but he had 5 sacks and 10 quarterback hits. And I do think the scheme mattered last year just as much as the fact he got hurt. But for the injury, that 3-4 defense just really didn't play to his strengths at around 305 pounds. And he's played big end some, too. And we know Pete Carroll likes to have 300-plus pound guys like Quentin Jefferson that could play that position occasionally. So he would give him some positional flexibility. But I'm going to look at a few of the other guys on our list here. Geno Atkins is probably the most decorated of these three. He has the most all-pro selections, almost 10 Pro Bowl selections in his career. Last year was an abysmal season for him, though. He only played in 8 games. He was a healthy scratch for a number of games. He had 1 tackle the entire year. Normally, that means that's a death sentence for the player, unless he had a tackle and then got a season-ending injury. But he played in 8 games, just didn't play a lot of snaps. But we know from what happened with Carlos Dunlap last year, Atkins was playing for a rebuilding team. They were trying to get younger players into the lineup. You got to wonder if a change of scenery that you can still squeeze another good season or two out of Atkins. My concern is that his game has been predicated on his quickness, a lot like Puna Ford, a short, stockier defensive tackle that has a good quick first step. I don't know that a player like this going into his mid-30s is necessarily going to be able to be overly effective. Now, if he has a good workout for you, then maybe you can justify bringing him in and he can have a bounce back year reuniting with Carlos Dunlap. But I would say Kawan Short is actually the player on this list that I'm the most intrigued by of the three. Even though he's only played 5 games the last 2 years, he's dealt with some shoulder issues. That's something that you're going to have to look into before you even consider signing him. But another player that's got multiple Pro Bowls, he's been an all-pro in his career. He's had an 11-sack season a couple other years with more than 7 sacks. And he's 315 pounds. Yeah. His game is more predicated on power. And I feel like those players can last longer and have longer careers being effective in the league than your guys that win with athleticism and that quick first step. So I still think Kawan Short can give you something. I think he can play some nose for you in your 4-3. He can play 3-tech. And he's even played some big end in his career before. I don't know if he does that in Seattle, but I like the fact that his game is more predicated on winning with power. He can win with finesse if he wants to, but he's been more effective in the power game. I just feel like that ages a bit better if he's healthy. And you're going to say that for all three of these guys. All these players 3-4 years ago, the Seahawks would have been chomping at the bit to have a chance to sign them. But now that they are in the latter stages of their career, they've had some injuries. The physicals have to check out. You got to see how they work out. But any one of these three players, if healthy, you'd love to be able to bring them in, kick the tires a bit, and see if you can work it out, because the Seahawks have had success bringing in older defensive tackles and having them fill a key role on the rotation for this defensive line. I feel like all three of these players could still do that. I just personally think Kawan Short offers the most intrigue because of his skill set. And he is a year younger than Geno Atkins as well.
And he's got, and as you mentioned, he's got that size. I mean, 6'3", 315 pounds. That's it's funny. Sometimes we've mentioned players' sizes and things, and the difference between a 305 pounder and a 315 pounder, it may not sound like much to our listeners out there, but it really does just you know, make a difference over the toll or over the course of a game, over the course of a season, and just with the way that they're built. And Kawan Short, you mentioned the name Quentin Jefferson before, you know, a former Seahawk, of course. And I think that you can make a parallel a little bit with Kawan Short, just the way that he is built. As you said before, with Jarrell Casey, as well as Geno Atkins, they're both kind of that, those short, stubby guys, kind of like a Puna Ford. And those guys, they win with leverage. They win with quickness, as you mentioned. Kawan Short with his power, his long arms. He's got a track record going back to his college days at Purdue of deflecting passes at the point of attack and knocking down kicks, PATs, things like that. We know what a priority that special teams is for this franchise. So I agree with you. To me, Geno Atkins is the biggest name. I would be the most surprised by Seattle signing him of this three. And as I mentioned before, Jarrell Casey, I'm most intrigued by, but Kawan Short is just short of that top spot on my list of the defensive tackles. And then I have Atkins, in my personal opinion. As you mentioned, of course, health is a huge issue. The salary expectations of these players would be a huge issue. But I do think this is a potential position of concern for the Seahawks. I do like the potential of leadership from all three of these veterans. And I think it's the type of splashy move right before training camp that the Seahawks have made in the past. And so I wouldn't be surprised at all to see him make one again.
The only player on this list that I've heard anything about the Seahawks having interest in, Geno Atkins, I was told back in April that they might look into that. And I've heard nothing about Jarrell Casey. I've heard nothing about Kawan Short. But now that those players have been cleared for football activities, we should start seeing some teams express interest. The Seahawks absolutely could look into all three of them. I could see a scenario where they don't sign any of these guys, though, and say, you know what, we're confident in the group we've got. We think Robert Kendiche is going to be a revelation. After being out of the league last year, we like Cedric Lattimore. We like Brian Monet. Puna Ford's ready to become a star. They might just be like, you know what? We like the group we have. We don't need to add anybody. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if they kick the tires on one of these players and at least get them into training camp and see if they can still play. And if they can, then that's a big win for the Seahawks defensive line. When we come back in the third quarter, we're going to continue our training camp preview, the tight end position, a spot that Rob and I believe is going to be much more heavily involved in Seattle's passing game with Shane Waldron as the coordinator. We're going to look at the depth chart and make a few bold predictions for the tight end position heading into the 2021 season. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Are you looking for a way to boost your workout game? Are you seeking a delicious protein bar without the sugar and carbs? Enter in the Built Bar, 18 amazing flavors, including nut and non-nut flavors. Some of the best ones, caramel brownie, cookies and cream, apple almond crisp, peanut butter, double chocolate. You're going to have a tough time eating just one. These bars are covered in 100% chocolate, soft, easy to chew. It's great for the health conscious guy. Lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, and they're great for a keto diet. Remember to use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your order. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Wednesday edition. This is your host, Corbin Smith, joined as always by the draft guru himself, Rob Rang. We're going to continue our training camp preview. We've covered a number of positions at this point, quarterback, running back. We've looked at cornerbacks as well. Now we're going to be looking at the tight end position. And last year, Rob, expectations were pretty high. Greg Olsen coming in, a lot of people thought he still had plenty left in the tank. They were bringing back Jacob Hollister after he had a breakout season in 2019. Will Dissly was coming back from an injury. They used a fourth-round pick on Colby Parkinson. Unfortunately, this group just didn't live up to expectations. A number of guys with 25, 24 receptions, not a lot of touchdowns from this group. And in the second half, not a lot of contributions as the offense sputtered, but there's a reason for optimism now, even though they only made a couple of significant moves here. The one biggest one being bringing in Gerald Everett in free agency. He just brings a different element to this offense they simply have not had at the tight end position really since Jimmy Graham left in 2017.
Yeah, there's no question about it. Gerald Everett is just a different level of athlete. You know, he's 6'3", 240 pounds, and he's running in the 4.5s, 37.5-inch vertical jump. I mean, this is a guy who was drafted in the top half of the second round just a couple of years ago. You know, played at South Alabama. I remember watching him go up against the big boys at the Senior Bowl, and Gerald Everett was among the best players on the field. Now, he is a really talented player, but he has not had a great deal of production over his first four seasons in the NFL. And so that's the rub there. I mean, he's got eight total touchdowns in four seasons. And, you know, last year he set his career high, but still only had 41 catches for a total of 417 yards. You know, so when you're looking for a difference maker, Gerald Everett has all the tools, but he does not yet have the actual proven production. And so that's what's going to be fascinating about this. I like the way that you started the conversation about tight ends, though, Corbin, because, you know, of course, I was among those who was most excited about Greg Olsen. I was very much touting how good he looked with he and Russell Wilson, the rapport that they had shown, you know, early on in the mini camps and training camps a year ago. So I do think that it's important to kind of look back and acknowledge that for as excited as people were about Greg Olsen, obviously he didn't have the production as expected. And so people should kind of temper their enthusiasm a little bit with Gerald Everett as well. And that's one of the reasons why I mentioned his numbers, which have been a little bit middling so far. But again, he is a dynamic talent. He does have that experience with Shane Waldron. As his, you know, former coach in Los Angeles. He is on that one-year type of prove-it deal. You know he is motivated to try to have the biggest possible season that he has, that he could possibly have. You know that Seattle has the dynamic wide receivers on the outside. It's hard for me to imagine a scenario, Corbin, barring injury, in which Gerald Everett doesn't go off and wind up becoming a huge part of Seattle's offense.
Yeah, I'm envisioning it too. And you look at the production, as you mentioned, he's never had more than 417 receiving yards a season. But when you consider that Tyler Higbee has been the number one tight end in LA throughout their 4 years that they've been together, and they've had the weapons they've had on the outside that have been gobbling up all the targets, that's played a role in it. And this is a player that I think was raw coming into the league, and he's made improvements as a blocker. You could move him around. So I definitely think that the table has been set for a breakout season. I'm not going to sit here and say he's going for 900 yards or something. The Seahawks have two receivers, maybe three receivers on the outside. They're going to have something to say about that, given the number of targets that they are going to get from Russell Wilson. But I absolutely think that Everett brings some elements to the tight end position that are going to be more appealing to Russell Wilson as a quarterback, especially the ability to stretch the field vertically, that I think are going to open the doors for him to have a big season. The real big question with this group, though, is not even necessarily about the individual players. It's about how Shane Waldron plans to incorporate tight ends into his scheme, because you and I have talked about this. We anticipate there's going to be a blend of some of the things the Seahawks have done in the past with Daryl Bevell and Brian Schottenheimer and some new concepts coming in with Shane Waldron. And we know that the Rams have loved throwing the football to their tight ends, Higbee and Everett, the last couple of seasons, and running backs as well. They like those secondary targets to go with their receivers, especially because the system for Sean McVay has been predicated on the quick passing game. From everything that Will Dissly and Everett have said so far this offseason, it sounds to me like we're going to see a lot of the same in Seattle. More emphasis on that quick game, more emphasis in the short to intermediate passing game. I expect that means more opportunities for the tight ends in general.
I agree with you. And I also think that it's going to be, as you said, the tight ends in general. I don't know that Gerald Everett is going to just absolutely dominate the statistics of that position, even though I do think that he is going to have that breakout season. I do anticipate that he is going to be the overall leader in production for the Seahawks at tight end. Just like with the Rams, I would fully expect Seattle to use the versatility of their tight end group. I mean, to me, when you look at Tyler Higbee with the Rams and just his build, his background, it is very similar to what the Seahawks have with Kobe Parkinson in terms of his size, in terms of his ball skills. I think that when you look at Will Dissly, to me, he's the one that I'm a little concerned about how much playing time is he going to have if Seattle gets into a little bit more of an up-tempo, passing offense. I mean, Disley has, while he has spectacular hands, he is a good route runner. He's never been that dynamic athlete. He doesn't have Parkinson's height. He doesn't have Everett's make you miss and elusiveness and power combination. So I still believe that Will Disley, because he is as reliable as he is, that he is going to be a featured target on, say, third downs and in the red zone. But to me, that's one of the fascinating things here is how does Seattle distribute the ball to their tight ends? And I think the more multiple they can be, the more difficult it's going to be on opponents to defend them. And that, of course, is exactly what Shane Waldron is looking to do.
And I mentioned the amount of usage for tight ends in Sean McVay's offense. A lot of it has to do with the fact that they run a lot of two tight end sets. So I'm anticipating that we're going to see quite a bit of that in Seattle. And Will Disley, I'm not as concerned about fit as what you are, because I do think that Shane Waldron is going to like having a pure inline blocking tight end that also has some receiving skills. And they are going to be blending some stuff they've done in the past. This is not going to be all Sean McVay's offense in the Pacific Northwest. There will be some elements that we've seen in the past, and that's going to be fine. That's the best way to mix with the personnel the Seahawks have. But I'm going to throw one more name out there to just keep an eye on in training camp. Tyler Mabry, coming into his second season. He was an undrafted rookie last year coming out of Maryland. Didn't have great production in college, but he really left a lot of jaws dropped to the floor in the press box during one of their mock scrimmages last year when he hurdled over Pro Bowl safety Quandre Diggs after the catch. And you saw some athleticism you were not expecting. And he made a lot of really nice plays during training camp. He's one of those tight ends you can move all over the place. He can play H-back in the backfield. He can run routes from the slot. He's a really sound blocker as an inline tight end, despite the fact that he's under 250 pounds. He just plays bigger than his size. And so we've seen Seattle keep four tight ends for most of the Pete Carroll era. I don't know that it happens now, but with the fact that Shane Waldron coming in probably going to be running more two tight end sets, I could see if Tyler Mabry plays well on special teams and has a really solid training camp, I could see him making this team as the fourth tight end. So you've got three other tight ends behind Everett that could find their way into the lineup that all offer some versatility and ability to move around the formation. That's good news for Seattle's offense.
Oh, absolutely is. And as you talked about, I mean, with Tyler Mabry, he's that 6'3", 247 pounds. I mean, that's very similar to what Gerald Everett, 6'3", 245 pounds. So that's kind of the MO that they want at that position. We talked about before with Kobe Parkinson, you know, that 6'7". 250 pounds. Cam Sutton, the player that they brought in from Fresno State as an undrafted free agent, he's 6'6", 226 pounds, really similar to the player that Seattle kind of gambled on a couple of years ago out of LSU in Stephon Sullivan. I love that you mentioned Tyler Mabry. Mabry outplayed Sullivan, and that's why he made the roster and Sullivan did not. So I think that Mabry is very intriguing player that is definitely going to be in the mix as well. So to me, this tight end group is one of the best I've ever seen in Seattle. It has the top line talent. It has the versatility. It has the depth. I think that it's a really good group and one of the positional groups that Shane Waldron was absolutely brought in to feature. I expect him to do so in 2021.
I think this is mostly about the coach that's going to be calling the plays as much as it is the depth. Because I look back at what Seattle had at tight end last year, and I still think that should have been a position group that was a larger focal point in the offense. And Brian Schottenheimer just never prioritized it. And I pushed him on it a few times in press conferences, like, why are tight ends not getting more involved? And basically, well, the targets are going to the receivers. But I expect that Shane Waldron is going to do a better job of implementing tight ends into the system. And for that reason, for my bold prediction, we've talked a lot about Gerald Everett. Out of the shadow of Tyler Higbee, I think he becomes the first Seahawks tight end since Jimmy Graham left, with over 550 receiving yards and 6 touchdowns. That's the type of production I'm expecting from him, bringing athleticism to this tight end group that Seattle simply has not had really since Graham left.
Yeah, and with those types of numbers, and we're talking about top 10 tight end across the league, so all you fantasy football enthusiasts might be very much intrigued by Gerald Everett. I agree with you. I think those are very attainable numbers for Gerald Everett. And yet, at the same time, I also almost wonder if it's not another tight end who's going to wind up leading the Seahawks in touchdown receptions. And so I'm not going to quite as bold as to say that this player is going to have the same type of breakout, but I do believe that Kobe Parkinson is going to emerge as a key red zone threat for the Seahawks. I mentioned that 6'7" height before. This is a guy that has incredible body control, long arms, sticky hands. I Russell Wilson has struggled throwing the fade in the past. You mentioned Jimmy Graham. I think a lot of Seahawks fans can remember how much that Wilson and Graham tried to hook up and make that a very difficult route to defend in Seattle, and that just never was the case. I think with Parkinson being the younger player that he is, Wilson at this stage of his career, they might be able to develop that. So I only think that Parkinson's probably going to get you 10, 15 catches maybe this year, but I wouldn't be surprised if roughly half of them wind up going for touchdowns. I do think that he may be the tight end that actually leads the Seahawks in looks in the red zone. And I say that with the full acknowledgement that as you just mentioned, I really think that Gerald Everett is about to become a star in Seattle's offense. I just wish that he had signed for a little bit longer, because I really think that he is going to try to splash not only this season, but in free agency next year as well.
If Vinny Iyer of the Locked On Fantasy podcast is listening, Rob Rang has spoken. Half of the targets going to Kobe Parkinson are going to be touchdowns. So at least we're looking 5 or 6 touchdowns there. I have to agree with you. I've been saying this since they drafted him. That is the area that I think he makes an immediate impact. He didn't get a chance to do that last year because he missed the first half with a broken foot. But with his size, his hands, that is a player inside the 20. You better be targeting. You better be looking for him. I think he could be a weapon. And I could see him having a season like that, kind of a Jerron Brown type season where not a lot of catches, but scores a lot of points. And if you're a fantasy owner, that should intrigue you for maybe a flyer for your second or third tight end in Kobe Parkinson. Make sure to check out the Locked On Today podcast hosted by Peter Bukowski, as he updates you on all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Make sure to check out Locked On Seahawks on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and the all-new Odyssey app. That's AUDACY. When we return for our Thursday episode, going to continue our training camp preview, going to be discussing the defensive end position. Looking forward to it. Thanks for tuning in. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Go Hawks.